Welcome to the KNEL Radio Podcast, your podcast for news, sports, music, and talk radio. KNEL Radio Podcast is your resource to local news and sports from the heart of Texas and the Texas Hill Country. Join us weekly for a Hillbilly Hits radio show highlighting traditional country music and artists. And At Home with Debbie Rule, a talk show about home, family, and relationships. KNEL Radio Podcast, making a difference in your life today.
We're an organization of landowners with the philosophy of neighbors helping neighbors do safe and effective prescribed burns, in a nutshell.
Well, you know, prescribed burns are very important and very useful, have a real place in the whole scheme of things out there. And it's a little bit different when you talk about, you know, we want to protect against wildfires and uncontrolled fires, but prescribed burn is a controlled fire, you know, basically, and it does have the benefits. And how long has it been around? How many, you know, sort of as an organized group?
The association itself, probably 20 years, but the concept of prescribed burning as we understand it today really started back with Henry Wright at Texas Tech in the late, early 1970s, and it's evolved from there into the prescribed situation we have now.
So, you know, a prescribed burn is, what's the purpose, you know, generally?
To improve your land. For whatever purpose, and there are many. An early account showed McCullough County many accounts of being an open prairie. A lot of reports of antelope, which are an open prairie animal, even on East Sweden Ridge. But the most visible sign of lack of burning is ash juniper, which has dramatically increased because it is a very fire-sensitive species and pretty aggressive. So that's most of people like to burn for prickly pear control or for juniper control.
Mm-hmm. And the benefit is you get rid of that, therefore it lets the land do what?
The land heals. So going along with that is a fairly good land stewardship program of managed grazing with a purpose and to benefit wildlife and livestock together.
So I guess to back up a step there, what's the difference between a prescribed burn and just a wildfire?
We like to think of a prescribed burn as one done with a written fire plan, much the same as a football team. They've got a game plan. They have a quarterback, and that would be our equivalent of a fire boss. They run the team. They know everybody's job. They manage the process, call changes, and so forth and like that, where sometimes what is called a control burn is no plan. Just go out there and burn it and hope for the best. But there's a fairly strict set of protocols in the prescribed burn,
for prescribed burn
program.
And the other aspect of it, you know, you answered part of the next question was, you know, what does it get rid of? And it gets rid of the noxious trees and shrubs, I guess. But it also, it I always had the idea that it really is a sort of a, you know, a catalyst for improving the vegetation that comes back.
That's right. It sometimes gets rid of built-up fuel loads. It can prevent catastrophic-type wildfires by managing the dry fuel loads. But fire really doesn't kill hardly anything. The only thing that it kills outright is ash juniper, because it does not resprout like its brother red berry juniper, which does resprout here. And anything that's a seedling that's growing, it will kill that. But other than that, it just resets the deck. It would change the architecture of plants, such as live oak and others that are good browse, but it just changes their growth form, stimulates some seeds, new growth to come, but doesn't kill very much.
Well, that's interesting. It really doesn't. It may look like it.
It does. It sure does.
But, you know, the fact you go out there after a burn, whatever kind of burn, mm-hmm. and you see all the grasses and the shrubs that are coming, mm-hmm. you know, brush that's coming back after that, that makes a big difference. And so then the benefit is?
The benefit is it increases the nutrient content of the plants that come back, and that would be good for cattle. It'd be good for wildlife, deer especially. And it increases the variety of plants that are available for wildlife. And, again, that's why it must be coupled with a grazing management plan with a long-term goal of, you know, providing that diversity on the landscape.
Okay. So how do you get started? Somebody decides, you know, what prompts a rancher to decide we need one, and then what are the steps involved in doing it?
it's a learning process. Join a PBA or others that and get in the network. There's a lot of information out there, but it's not easily accessible until you get into the network. There are training schools. There's a three-day school. There's online schools. And all of that together is learning and working with others that have the experience. It's probably no different than a lot of professions. Learn, watch, observe, go to burns, have someone mentor you on your own, and take deliberate steps and study. Continue to study. No burns have been the same in the 40-something years I've been doing this.
40 years. Well, and let's back up a step.
You didn't think I was that old, did you?
No, I didn't. You're a young-looking guy. I was going to just sort of take a step back. You're with the Prescribed Burn Associations. What's your background? You're from Rochelle. We were talking before.
Yeah, that was my first introduction to fire at Rochelle during harvest. At that time, the railroad sometimes would set fires, and we'd have to quit harvest and go put out the wildfires. And we thought of them all as bad. But then as time began, we noticed those areas didn't come back as much brush the second time. So I went to work with the USDA's, at that time, Soil Conservation Service. Now it's the Natural Resources Conservation Service as a range land management specialist, and spent 42 years with them. And that's where I got most of my experience.
42 years as a range management specialist.
Yeah, I took that job until a better one came along, see?
Never got there. You've been back in McCullough County how long now?
About 6 years. And wife and I retired and moved back here about 6 years ago.
And so you're the main guy, though, for the Burn Association.
Well, I'm one of the officers. Helping, but we'd be glad to help do workshops for people, the training.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted for us to be sure and mention. You know, there is help. Somebody isn't on their own out there, and the Burn Association is there to help people do that, and the help is available in planning it, figuring out what you want to do.
That's correct. It's simply there for the asking, and if there's interest, we can put together, and have done this before, local programs and go out to local ranches and do burns so people can watch, and then the academic side of it, and to try to put it together. We're glad to help.
And so, you know, some other sort of things apart about it. What is, you know, we talked a little bit about a burn plan, and putting together a plan is prescribed burn is where you have a plan, a controlled burn is you hope.
Correct.
Hope that everything goes right.
Well, some of the components, you got a good map that everyone will have. You've got your objectives, why you want to do a burn. You have equipment lists and the valuable prescriptions, and we've got a fire weather forecasting officer in San Angelo that's done us a real good job on fire forecasting, weather, the sequence, the techniques that you use, backfires and those sort of things, how you do it safely, how you monitor your weather, how you manage your smoke. There's a way to do that.
Okay, you manage the smoke, huh?
Yes, we try to. Weather being weather, but there are some tools available to predict smoke behavior in associated with the burn.
Okay, so such as what?
Such as if there are inversions, which is warm air over cold air, and it holds the air down, basically. And so a smoke cannot get above that, and that's not only always visible in there. You can't see it, but they can tell it in the weather, and they'll tell you there's an inversion, and it will lift at a certain time. And so that's a good prediction tool.
I take it that you don't really want to be burning during an inversion when it's going to hold the smoke down on the ground and all the neighbors are going to complain.
Absolutely. You want to be a good neighbor the burn.
Well, that's
and for
point.
Safety, you know, air quality safety. We want to make sure we do a good job with that smoke management.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. Yeah, I find that. So you have to get permission to burn.
No.
No. You don't.
Sort of. Texas is a right to burn state. But if a burn ban is on, then you do work with the local county officials, county judge, et cetera. And they can, if you've got a good enough record, give you an exemption on your property for that burn. But you have to present them a prescribed burn plan and go through it. The only other people that have exceptions are people certified by the Texas Department of Agriculture as certified and insured prescribed burn managers, and they have the authority and the permission of the state to burn during a burn ban, and they take all the liability. They have to maintain a certain training level, have to maintain a certain liability area, but they have some notification protocols, but they do have the ability and the authority to burn in a burn ban anywhere.
That's Yeah, you're mentioning burn bans. You know, both McCullough County and Mason County recently had burn bans. They've lifted them both. And in the case of Mason County specifically, they had the, you know, a part of the provision for the burn ban was here's the procedures for agricultural burns or people working hot work, welders, that kind of thing. That was part of it. So that is there may be a burn ban, but there also it can often be a sort of you can burn if you do these things. And the first thing you do is have a plan. And the next thing you do is notify the dispatcher and those people that get permission through the county.
That is correct. And we're not against burn bans. We understand the need for burn bans, but so far we've also had good county officials to work with, and they've been cordial in working with us, and so we like the situation as it is now.
You mentioned that we mentioned the idea of a good neighbor being a good neighbor with burn bans because, you know, a burn in a sizable burn in, you know, far west eastern part of the county can affect the far western part of the county, and some folks get concerned about that. So what basically is to be a good neighbor? What do you do?
Sometimes notify your neighbor so that they don't look out the window and become terrified. And you notify, of course, the dispatchers. You do that. You qualify. You know, work with them. Make sure your smoke is not harmful to someone. Put in good fire guards. Use good techniques. There's ways of measuring the flammability index of juniper before a burn, so you can kind of use that as a prediction tool. So I guess that was it. It is the main thing.
It's making sure they know it's coming.
Yeah, know it's coming, and they're not surprised, and we've been.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. The interesting aspect of it, and that is, you know, we're talking about the burning, you know, as a control of brush. Mm-hmm. There are other ways to control brush.
Mm-hmm.
We try. You know, mm-hmm. We spray it with something.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best thing to do? Best way to go? Or also dig it up.
That's right. And all those are useful in some ways. Some brush gets too big to respond to a burn. So you have to go in mechanically. And same thing with chemicals. You might be in a location where, for smoke or other reasons, you can't burn near a subdivision. You know, there will be very reasons, legitimate reasons, fire would not work. But the big thing is cost. Mechanical treatment, $200-$300 an acre perhaps. Chemicals, less than that. But fire is not totally cheap, but probably $20 to $50 per acre. The expensive part is what brush control you have to do before burn to get your fire guards secure, and your fire guards themselves installing the fire guards.
Well, that's a good question. I hadn't asked that. You know, what precautions do you take with a prescribed burn to make sure you don't become uncontrolled, to maintain control?
Number one thing is good fire guards. Number two is have a good crew, trained crew, good equipment that has a good water source, and it will run and it's in good maintenance shape. And then using techniques such as backfiring and strip firing and things like that that take the fire off in little chunks before it can build momentum. And then when you come to what they call the head fire, the main one, you've got a long black line out there with which to burn into. And again, there are fairly strict guidelines on the weather prescriptions, wind, temperature, humidity, et cetera.
Okay. And is there a minimum amount of humidity?
When one starts burning below 25% humidity, the firebrands live in the air a long time. And when it gets below 20%, the fire becomes pretty hard to manage. And below that, and that's why these wildfires in these fronts that come through with dry, hot wind are so hard to put out, because at below 20%, it's very hard, and the firebrands live a long time. They hit the ground downrange and cause spot fires. Hard to keep up with when it's that low.
Firebrand, for the rest of us, is called ashes?
Ashes and sparks.
And sparks,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, little pieces of embers, live oak leaves, things like that float and burn.
Okay.
A good range is 30 to 60% humidity.
Yeah.
Just a rule of thumb.
30 to 60. Okay. Mm-hmm. And one of the other questions would be, you know, this is not a one-time deal.
That's right. It's historically, the country burned probably on a 4 to 7, maybe a 10-year return interval, and it did that for thousands of years. That's why we had that country. But a one-time burn is usually good to clean up debris and kill certain plants like ash juniper. But to keep it sustained, a person here would want to think about every 5 to 7, 10 years to have a return burn to keep it in good shape.
Yeah,
maintain it.
Is there a size of that's preferred size? You know, X number of acres is the sort of preferred. You know, you don't want to go beyond, for example, X number of acres.
No, not really. What the limitation becomes is how much can you burn in a day.
Okay.
Because the TCEQ has responsibilities for management, and you can't burn at night without a written permission, or you can't start a fire at night. You can burn into the night, but it's for smoke problems. That's the reason that night burning is sort of discouraged is smoke issues.
Yeah.
Smoke settles at night. So what can you burn in a day? Some people I've seen use helicopters and ignite 10,000 acres in a day. But that's pretty aggressive.
That sounds very. I think that's an understatement to say be aggressive. So how does somebody get the as sort of the knowledge they need to be consider themselves know what they're doing and sort of involved with control burns.
The feeling going around in the burn community is if you've had one burn, you're dangerous. You've had 10 burns, you're darn dangerous. And the reason
but you think you know what you're doing.
That's it, exactly. And it happens in pilots, people that drive, but you get overconfident, you take shortcuts. And I can speak that, yes, you do. So once you get past that, you begin to develop a routine. So 10 to the state required 30 burns for their certification.
Okay.
Before they'll certify people there, and so it's
as a certification as a
certified prescribed burner.
Okay.
And there's several different certifications that the state has there, and I'm a certified instructor, but there's also the certified burn managers that do the burning.
And take 30 burns.
30 burns and some pass the test, and there's it's pretty rigorous,
and
intended to be.
I hope so.
Intended to be.
Want the guys doing that to know what the heck they're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I guess I have to ask, you ever had one that got away from you?
Fair question, and the answer is yes. I've had in my career two that got out of where they were supposed to be, but I've never had one leave the pasture. Because when we had the spot fire, when it got out, we went to Plan B, the contingency plan that's in the fire plan. We were able to surround it, backfire around it, and surround it, and it never got out of where it was. But it's a very humbling feeling to know that you have no more control over that fire, and except to go exercise your contingency plan, and that's what we did.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. Was there anything we haven't covered about prescribed burns that you want that comes to your mind? That's being things folks should know.
I would say that the perception that everybody's familiar with wildfires.
Yeah.
But a national survey showed that of over thousands of burns, less than 1.5% actually got into over somewhere where you had to call backup. And that's a very high success rate. And
sure
it's
is.
All attributed to training and these certifications. And so people do it right. There's a very high success rate there. So I'd say that that's the imperative to get the training, know what you're doing so you can do it in a successful, in a stewardship way.
Okay. One of the things that just occurred to me is that, you're going to you have an area that you've decided that needs to be burned and so forth. You go in and you do it. How soon does it regenerate where you can basically start putting cattle back on it?
Sometimes immediately, and it's a site specific, but for instance, if you're burning with and you have brush and you have goats, you put the goats in immediately to graze the regrowth to keep the brush down. Sometimes if it's the grass and the grass needs help, you would wait for another year to let the grass recover fully because it's coming back from seedling stage, basically, in some places.
Okay. So it just depends on what your what kind of stuff you've got there and what your problem.
And what you want it to look like in 10 years.
In 10 years. maybe we covered this before and I just failed to realize. How often, if somebody is on a sort of a cycle, mm-hmm. they're going to take care of their land, and how often should they sort of think about doing this?
On rangeland, which native plants and so forth, probably no more than a 10-year interval.
Okay.
There, even red bear juniper that resprouts doesn't grow that rapidly, and so if you want to get it before it gets too big for the grass you've got and the soil types to not be effective burn. You want to stay ahead of that.
Okay. And again, we mentioned that the Heart of Texas Prescribed Burn Association. How does somebody get in touch with you if they want to find out more about doing burning or getting more information? What do they do?
Getting in our treasurer has address is our cost to join is $35 per year, and that gets you into the network, so to speak. And you can mail a check to the Heart of Texas Prescribed Burn Association at 711 CR 302. Brady, of course, and then that zip code is 76825, and that will get you there. You'll be put on the rolls, and we have distribution lists, and we mail people of upcoming events, things of interest to those that would like to do a safe burn.
A safe burn, and get going with it. And again, the emphasis on that there is help available of the folks that the association know what they're doing. And I think of, the people who are, new landowners in the area who have, fulfilled the dream of moving down here and buying a certain amount of acreage, and they then realize, well, gee, how do I take care of it?
Yeah. I just mentioned that the G. Raleigh White firm has been very gracious to us in furnishing us some sprayers, slip-in sprayers, so we've got those that we can loan, and we have lots of other equipment. Again, it's neighbors helping neighbors is the whole idea. Everybody shares and then helps each other.
Yeah, I never thought about that. The equipment that you need to be able to do this is not something that every rancher is going to have laying around the house.
That's true, especially with some with smaller acreages. It really can't have a budget to have a fire truck or anything. They can use these and maybe get some other people that would have one. So it's a swapping situation. Yeah. Neighbor helping neighbor. Yeah,
it makes sense. Okay. And, I'll ask you the basic question, and it's sort of, we've talked about it, but it's sort of a simple question. Why do we need a prescribed burn association?
Bringing people together, it's like a football club, I guess. You get together and share war stories. Stories are learning, but pooling the equipment, having a good, well-trained team, when you have a burn that same team can go, you know what each person's talent, what they're going to do, that they're not going to panic and to stay calm and think methodically, to communicate among each other. It's like any social organization in a way, but also to network with the agencies that might be helpful, legislatures, when legislation comes up, and there's been some good, favorable, significant legislation this last go-around, and also to work with other prescribed burn associations, which in Texas there's like 12
really?
Around. We're our parent organization is the Edwards Plateau one, which runs from Mills County to Del Rio, 17 counties in that one, so that's why we're in chapters. But so there's many chapters around, so you get into that network and can go, and there's a lot of written material, a lot of stuff online. There's no lack of help if someone wants to learn, and no lack of someone that would be willing to help.
Well, and it's important, again, because there are the benefits of it offhand, but at the same time, it's something where you got to be careful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we all want you to be careful.
Yeah, we do too, because we don't want to lose the ability to use fire as a practice, so we want people to be very good stewards, and we're willing to help each other to do that.
Do you think it's underused?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's very, not surprised by your answer. Not surprised. All right. Well, Mark, we appreciate you being here.
Thank you for your interest, Lynn.
It's been fascinating. I really am. And again, if somebody is interested in become a part of it, $35 to join the Heart of Texas Prescribed Burn Association, 711 County Road 302 in Brady, 76825. That's the address. You can get signed up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Mark Mosley with the Heart of Texas Prescribed Burn Association. We'll be back with more of the morning program coming up in just a moment. As we said, we're brought to you by Mason Building Supply, your hometown.
Thank you for listening to the KNEL Radio Podcast. Be sure to tune in live to KNEL 95.3 FM and KNEL 1490 AM and KNELradio.com. For more KNEL Radio Podcast, including KNEL Sports, visit KNELradio.com homepage and click on the podcast of your choice to listen, download, and enjoy. KNEL Radio Podcast, making a difference. Thank you for listening today. We'll